Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. I find it ironic that in my show before I got shut down show, I was kind of commenting that things have been going pretty good. And as you can tell, the episode on Friday was a rerun because we were not able to get connected. But it was on our end regarding the server. So anyway, long story short, there was a replay of the Thursday show. And so you heard that twice. And then on Monday, because we'd already had Friday show in the can, and I've got a lot of things that I've just got to do, and all this is relevant stuff. It's either marketing and so forth. If you're tuning in to, you know, to get the latest analysis on things that really won't solve any problems, then this is not the show, because we are very focused on highlighting really what the real problems are. And as a matter of fact, it was ironic again that I was pointing to social media and that I happened to have a faux pas or a slip regarding Zuckerberg and Mark, the CEO of Facebook, and how these people are the enemies of the state. We're going to focus today on social media and how they really are the enemy and what they are doing. And I'm going to go into some details as to how I believe the government should be going after these pogues, because bottom line, they are not champions of our principles and of our ideals, such as liberty. And so because they aren't, because they're not there to be leaders, then we're here to basically call them out for, you know, being contrary and actually being anti-American, anti-Constitution, because when they're shutting down actual dialogue, as you can tell, and as you know, last Friday, Senator Cruz actually went to the microphone and Graham was there and so forth, talking about Twitter actually deliberately and actively blocking information, then they're playing a censorship role. So here's the question, and what we need to do is define what is social media and actually determine its role, because here's a company that's offered a service. Is it a viable news place? Is it a viable place where information can be given, where it could either be false information or not? And here's the question. Why is it that Facebook takes the, let's just say they become the champions on what is true and what is valid, instead of just saying, you know what? Anything that you get, if it's an ad, then you need to be aware that, you know, somebody can say anything as long as they're paying us, because to us, it's not about trying to suppress anything. You know, if the ads are out there, we're going to take the money. And I believe that they shouldn't be the moral judges, especially because of their moral turpitude. If you understand that, what that means is that they just have no grounding in morality and they are doing all sorts of immoral things. So anyway, we're going to focus on this. But before we do, one of the things I just want to kind of put out there, that I am getting ready to go and to give a speech regarding the Constitution and opportunities of leadership at a political level. And I'll give you more details on that as that comes up. But you know me, I don't, because of OPSEC, I don't want to tell people what day or where I'm going to give them, you know, a real tip as to where I'm going to be. But I will tell you that we're getting an opportunity to get the message out. And because of this show and because of its audience and its growth, we're, you know, the message is getting out more and more. I'm actually having opportunities to sit on other people's shows and or getting reporting and so forth. Anyway, long story short, I have an opportunity. So I'm going to give you kind of a heads up of what I'm going to be talking about in the next few days, within a couple of weeks before I leave out of here. But bottom line, the other thing I wanted to ask you is, are you pondering? Because I've been asking, as American citizens, you have a birthright responsibility because you happen to be born in the land of liberty, or the land that was designated as a land of liberty, where your rights were guaranteed and protected by the U.S. Constitution, not by the Declaration of Independence. They were originally claimed in the original Declaration of Independence, but those have been all actualized in the U.S. Constitution. And I get these comments from people regarding the organic Constitution. I understand the essence of what that means, but most people that throw that out there means that the Declaration of Independence is still active law. The Declaration of Independence was never really the law. It was a message sent to Britain basically declaring that we were a free people and that we are no longer going to have allegiance to Britain, that because they have failed to recognize America's plight as Englishmen and the fact that they've refused to give us representation, then we're done, we're gone. And that's what that was. A declaration. It wasn't an establishment of law. And as a matter of fact, the declaration wasn't integrated into any state constitution. Some of the principles were already kind of there, but certain state constitutions did not create bills of rights or anything. The Bill of Rights, that the first Bill of Rights ever written on American soil, was a byproduct of the Constitutional Convention. And I hope people start to understand that this was an epoch. The Declaration of Independence was a turning point, but it wasn't truly the epoch, because we didn't really shed this hostility and these machinations by Britain and other states of Europe that wanted to conquer, and they were conquerors and conquestors. And so what we had to do was, we actually had to not only prove that we created a government that was resoundingly better than theirs, we actually had to become resolved in defending those things that we created within that government. So it wasn't until really the Treaty of Ghent where America was able to kind of shed some of its fears and concerns of outside dealings and outside hostilities, and be able to really start looking forward. And that was, what, 1814? So it was, probably almost 40 years after the Declaration of Independence, almost. So the point I'm making is that I am not disrespecting the Declaration of Independence, but I am not trying to create a false elevation of, what it really is and what it really means. It was a turning point. The true epoch that occurred in America was the U.S. Constitution. And there's a reason why it is the true epoch. It is because it, as described and as asserted and attested by the framers involved, even the very first session of Congress unanimously declared and requested Washington to declare a day of giving thanks to him, to our Lord, as the benefactor of receiving the tranquility and peace through this document. And my point here is, friends, is that because we have this divinely inspired Constitution, the divine hand of providence and his role to play in this is something that we need to always be thoughtful of. And more importantly, I truly believe that as we move in towards Thanksgiving and the annual reading of Washington's first proclamation, to help people center themselves on what Thanksgiving really should be about. It shouldn't be about this huge feast. I mean, it's okay to make it about family, but one, it needs to be Christ-centered, and we have to recognize Christ's hand in creating this government for us. So again, and I really started down this whole path of talking about your role and responsibility as a birthright recipient of liberty. Are you pondering your role and the importance of using First Amendment petitions and calling and using those First Amendment petitions to demand the calling of common law grand juries and the militia? Your responsibility in being a part of the militia, whether that's the organized or unorganized, your choice, it's up to the state and so forth. But just to be clear, the state actually has the power to mandate how many people will be involved, and they should be mandating how many each county needs to have on the hook to be able to service its county in dire needs, whether that be civil unrest, like what we see with this crap Bolshevik revolution of Antifa and Black Lives Matters, because that's what they are. They're communist revolutionaries. And so anyway, long story short, I hope you've been pondering this burden that we all share as U.S. citizens. And more importantly, before I run out of time, as you know, this show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. So we're going to go into a break. And when we come back, we're going to dive into social media. But what we're going to do is we're going to take this road down the First Amendment. And so we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. Okay, so we do have some memes. That's right, I haven't told you this. We do have some memes, and I haven't got them posted yet. I'm just way too busy. Anyway, want to thank you for tuning in. I haven't done that in a little while, but I do want to remind you that this show is growing because of you and because people are taking notice and they're actually hearing either from you or others and so forth. I'm actually being called, hey, would you be on my show and so forth. And I appreciate that. That makes me busier, but that's okay. Being busy in these kinds of ways and good ways and having good results is important. So Anyway, I do know that we want to get into marketing and news, but more importantly, I think it's really important to, as a part of this marketing, because one of the memes that we have that we want to put up is that, you know, we're writing the annals of history now for this republic in this coming decade. And the question I would pose to anybody that is a public servant is, how will they be written in the annals of history? Because there's three things that will be recorded about them. One of three things, only one of three. In other words, they're going to be on one of three paths. One path is that they will be working and supporting the demise of our liberty and our Constitution. So will they be recorded as one of those evil doers that have stolen and worked to basically collapse our system? The second path is doing nothing. Will history record them as an ineffective public servant that did nothing? And in essence, because they did not fight these unconstitutional changes and this unconstitutional direction, because they did not fight, then they are equally as culpable as those who were ardently pushing and moving, like AOC, Omar, and all of these other radical, rabid communists that are trying to destroy this good nation, which technically they don't have any power to do this. The question comes down to, are we going to allow them to do this? And are we going to create bulwarks within our state and our state legislatures to actually defend against this, to defend against Congress? Because you can send the greatest people to Congress, but that does not change the effect and the impact the deep state has on any politician that goes to D.C. I've yet to see a person going to D.C. that's actually survived. Even Ron Paul is, you know, in all honesty and all fairness to Ron Paul and some of these other folks, they have had and received questionable education regarding our history, because anybody that espouses that the framers were non-interventionists, well, that was only the Washington administration, because of how infantile we were as a nation and for a lot of other strategic purposes, why they went down that path. We had debt looming and all sorts of other things, but with Adams, he changed the position, and with Jefferson, there was an active change. So when he talks about the framers being non-interventionists, are you kidding? He doesn't understand history, or he's stuck in a vacuum of, you know, the first edict by Washington trying to take a non-alliance, non-intervention position. But anyway, what we want to do is we want to right now kind of focus on the First Amendment, the 14th Amendment, and the right of speech and the right of the press. And so let's start off with the First Amendment, because as you know, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free speech thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press. So what is freedom of speech and what is the press? That means you have a right to say what you want to say. Now, there are things called decency laws that are legitimate laws that you can't use expletives as, you know, openly expression, that, you know, obscenities are not considered acceptable. Now, even though the Supreme Court had ruled that, you know, and what I think it was Kennedy that said, "I'll know pornography when I see it," or obscenity or whatever, and it was a ruling in favor of the of pornography. The fact of the matter is that states do have the right to create decency laws regarding institutions. When they talk about the freedom of the press right here, that is a First Amendment restriction upon whom? Upon all of us? No, only upon the general government, because the Bill of Rights and the preamble clearly stated that having in convention the ratification of the Constitution, states expressed the desire to have further declaratory restrictive clauses against the federal government to help promote the faith of this new institution. So what they did was they created these further restrictions in addition to the enumerated powers. So in other words, even though they may not have listed the, you know, every little thing under the sun within these, the Bill of Rights, does not mean that the federal government, because it's not listed, they can go ahead and meddle with it. They still have an enumerated constitution, and the only jurisdiction and the only thing the federal government can meddle with are those things that are enumerated in there, except when you go to the Ninth Amendment, the enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. So in other words, there's even this little catch clause of the Ninth Amendment that basically says, even though you may have the power to regulate commerce, but that does not give you the right to be able to disparage, you know, such, and kind of remember, the Commerce Clause was not allowing them to regulate every nuance of commerce. It was the ability to lay taxes. It was the ability to have imposts and or expost taxes, or I should say impost and or exporting taxes. Forgive me about the expost. Anyway. So the fact is, the federal government has no way to create any restrictions upon the press because the freedom of the press shall not be abridged. However, what applies the Bill of Rights is the 14th Amendment. And the 14th Amendment is actually pretty clear, but some people kind of get lost in this. And the fact of the matter is, it is the second sentence or clause that says, "No state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States." So, is the press a citizen? Well, yes, it can be if you are a reporting citizen on your own. So, this is why we want to look at social media now in context to the Constitution. So, Facebook is an institution. They are a corporation. They're a multi-billion dollar global corporation, right? Nobody will argue this. So the First Amendment and the federal government cannot really create restrictions upon the press, you know, as far as Facebook goes. However, Facebook is really just a social media platform. So Facebook may offer some news, but they cannot hinder or they cannot make rules and or filtering laws regarding you, the press. In other words, when you say, is it news when you create an event? Yes, you're creating an event and you have the, you know, you can use this platform because you're a member of it and they're open to allowing anybody to be a member. They cannot, without violating your rights of providing news on their platform. And so bottom line is Facebook has no right to filter individual reporters. They can. And so the real problem is, as everybody knows, that when these guys got their traction, they were given this sweet deal of protection to allow them to do all the filtering that they wanted to do. And I believe that was all done. Remember, as Washington says, usurpations may have the best intent, but it is, you know, always done in a process of undermining and overthrowing a country. And so when they actually got the federal government to allow this, you know, power to be granted to Facebook or and Twitter and to social media, to these companies, what they basically did was they gave them the ability to start manipulating information as it's being presented so that they can drive things ideologically the way they want. I've been saying this for years now. This is my book, the scale of liberty, and we'll get into this. As a matter of fact, we're going to be covering the scale of liberty either right before the election or right after the election, because these are fundamental principles that we start building upon our case as we move down the establishment of this Constitution. And so between now and the end of the year, there's a few things we're going to end up going through to build up for the, once again, going through the ratification debates for you. We believe, I truly believe, if I can overwhelm you with so many quotes and citations that you can become a powerhouse. You can become a true leader by using these citations and quotes as you stand up against tyranny and lead people down this path of restoring our liberty. We'll be right back after these two promos and getting more into the freedom of speech and the freedom of press. We'll be right back. Thank you so much. The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our Constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay, so one of the things we have to focus on is obviously these protections that these social platforms have. But let's first look historically at the internet and how maybe naive we were. And also how all-powerful the general government believed they were. Because the reason why we read the First Amendment and the Second or the 14th Amendment is due to the fact that the general government can make no law abridging the freedom of speech and or of the freedom of the press. So in other words, as far as the federal government is concerned, they can't do anything in regulating the press, freedom of the press. In other words, if there's a regulation out there, then the only way they can make a regulation to the press, as it is ambiguously placed, because what we have to do is we have to actually define that what the press really is. And so Let's kind of dive into this. But first off, let's understand the evolution of the internet. Because way back when these protections were put in place, because you're going to find out it was quite a while ago, a few decades, or almost a few decades, over two. And the point is that at that time they had chat rooms and they had platforms to allow people to communicate back and forth. Now, is a platform considered the press? Well, no, not really, if it's just a platform allowing people to interact. What would be considered the press? If a platform is providing news, or what one would consider news, whether it's propaganda or not, but they're trying to provide information, whether it be accurate or not, is not relevant at this point. But are they trying to provide information of current events, what's going on? Then technically, they fall under an umbrella of the press. Does that make sense? Because if they're giving you news on what's going on, you know, President Trump got COVID, and they actually inject these things so that you see these types of things, which in social media, each of them has their own way of injecting. But if they are injecting information, whether it be accurate or not, they are, quote unquote, playing in a press role. They are also providing a platform for its users. And so who are its users? Again, when we look at the press, we have individuals who are individually reporting what the heck's going on or something that they have found in doing research and so forth. And so individual users are and can be the press because it is basically a single reporter, freelance reporter, right? The Drudge Report. He was Drudge or whomever. I don't know if that's his real name, but that's irregardless because, you know, I'm bad with names. But the point is that he's an independent reporter. He doesn't work for a company. So people that are independent reporters are considered the press as well. Now, as I've gone through this a few times, I've said that the general government, the federal government, has no authority, has no power to actually regulate the press in any way. In other words, the First Amendment is really, 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 really clear. And what it states is that the general government shall create no law respecting the freedom of the press. So in other words, the FEC and any of these regulations and guidelines that they've created were actually overreaches, and they opened the door for more overreaching. So moving forward, the social media platform started to evolve. And again, back in those days, they had bulletin boards, which really no regulation other than regulations started coming in from the government regarding pornography, specific standards of pornography, and those types of things. And that was pretty much the primary concern back then. People had no idea that pornography at that point in time and at any point in time really can reach into all facets of life. When you look at any, so what is pornography? Well, most people look at it as sexual or explicit types of content. To me, I believe that if you look at some political content, it is pornographic. It is unsuitable for people to see, and or especially for people of a certain age to actually start being exposed to those types of ideologies like communism and or subjugationists like Islam and so forth. And my point is that what we want to do is we want to actually look at really, because the news, and as we know, as everybody has listened to what Cruz has said and others have said about the blocking and the filtering being done by Twitter, can Twitter actually do that? Well, as far as the general government's concerned, and as I've said, they can make no law regarding the freedom of the press. They can't make any regulation. But I have told you and told you and told you, states can make those regulations. And states need to make those regulations. And states need to make, actually, they need to assert standards because we are independent and sovereign states. We've never delegated to the general government the power to take away and to delegate power of the press. so that they can regulate the press. The creation of the FEC is unconstitutional. But the states do have the power. And so if you live in a blue state where they actually support the propaganda and the filtering of the truth, then people who live in those states will actually suffer even more. However, those who live in red states can actually have those freedoms. So what really happens is, instead of having a centralized law, because look at Facebook and all these social media platforms, they actually operate in all these different countries around the world, and each country has its own regulations and or standards. So what's 50 more? Really, what is 50 more states setting standards for them? And so, again, because Facebook is not an individual citizen, they're not a single entity, they are a corporation of people, then organizationally, the states can regulate them. They can't regulate individuals. And so that what that means is independent reporters who are posting on Facebook have the ability to and should not have any censorship whatsoever by Facebook and or Twitter. Just so you understand, what the states can do is they can actually tell Twitter and Facebook that every U.S. citizen has a right to be posted, and you cannot filter their content unless it has something to do with a decency standard. Because again, the states have the power to even create decency standards of this is pornography. The federal government really has zero power over all of this. There is nothing delegated to them in the Constitution. So when we go down this path of talking about this, you know, we're going to be reading and or talking about Section 230, Trump and Congress and so forth. And so Section 230 is a part of the FEC regulations, and it is a U.S. law protecting not just social media platforms, because at that point in time when this was created, Section 230 kind of protected communication platforms, not just social media, because bulletin boards and chat rooms and platforms that allowed those types of things at that point in time, again, Facebook didn't exist and some of these other, I think even MySpace didn't exist. The core purpose of Section 230 is to protect the owners of any interactive computer service from liability for anything posted by third parties. So the key word here, interactive computer services. It does not have to be a social platform. It could have been like I'm saying, a bulletin board or even Craigslist. The idea was that such protection was necessary to encourage the emergence of new types of communication and services at the dawn of the internet. So in other words, they didn't want to create regulations that was going to create these curbs. So Section 230 was enacted in guess whose era? Bill Clinton, 1996, as a part of law called the Communications Decency Act, which was primarily aimed, and they don't have any power to create this. They have zero power to do this. Unfortunately, and I'm telling you, friends, as nice as it is to have a central law and central controls over online pornography, it does not matter. We do not want the general government to be the deciders of what's decent and not, because all of a sudden, then they can start going after what's considered white speech or any type of race. They can open up so many different doors. It is not worth ever giving the general government power over domestic matters. So anyway, this act or this law, this Decency Act, was basically aimed at curbing online pornography. Most of that law was struck down by the courts as unconstitutional infringement on free speech, but Section 230 still remains. Now see, the funny thing is that they basically said it's an infringement on free speech, and again, that it allows, but here's the federal government. Does the federal government have any jurisdiction? Now, what should have happened is what they should have said what the Supreme Court should have said, instead of protecting freedom of speech, they should have protected the Constitution and told the general government, this is zero, you have zero jurisdiction over this, and we have zero jurisdiction over this. You must disband all of this and the FEC. With that, we'll be right back, and we're going to dive more into Section 230 so that you understand what the heck's going on. Thank you so much. If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so let's continue going into these social media, or actually these platform protections, because, again, these were not intended for social media because they didn't exist in 96 as we know it today. In practice, the law shields any website or service that hosts content from lawsuits over content posted by users. So in other words, if you happen to post something that might be offensive or what have you, the typical thing to do is you sue who has the deep pockets. And so if the platform is Facebook, they obviously have deep pockets, and you can go after them and sue them. So they created this protection. They indemnified these platforms, okay? And so what do you do if you have a problem? Then you'd actually have to go after a user. And sometimes, I'm not sure how many accounts you might have that might be actually legitimately traced to you, but there's lots of people on the web that use anonymity, and they do not provide all the details, and that way they can abandon the account and all accounts associated to the accounts, if you understand what I'm saying. So in other words, when the law was written, site owners worried that they could be sued if they exercised any control or what appeared to be control on their sites. So the law includes a provision that says so long as sites act in quote-unquote good faith, they can remove content that is offensive or otherwise objectionable and or allow other content up and still not be sued. The statute, and again, there's my hot button word. I do not like the word statutes and regulations and so forth, because there's nowhere in the Constitution where the general government has the authority to use any statute, regulation, or so forth. They can only create laws in pursuant to the Constitution. Anyway, The statute does not protect copyright violations or certain types of criminal acts. Users who post illegal content can themselves be held liable in court. So that's probably why there's a lot of users out there that have this, and they've tried to have anonymity or autonomy. They've tried to make sure that they were away from and or can't be proven that that was them. Anyway, the tech industry and many others have long held that Section 230 is a crucial protection, though the statute has become increasingly controversial as the power of internet companies has grown. And so Section 30 or 230, it is being misinterpreted because it does not require sites to be neutral. Most legal experts believe any effort to require political neutrality by social media or any of these platforms would be a violation of their First Amendment's right of free speech. Now, I'm here to tell you that if this platform is providing services to you, the press, then they cannot create their own laws. And even though they're a private institution, states can actually create a law that says you cannot filter individual accounts unless it violates obscenity or if it is illegal activity. Now, see, one of the things I think Facebook would actually continue getting away with, because this whole thing popped up with Cruz and this Washington Post, no, actually it was the New York Post, that had all the evidence regarding, hacked evidence regarding Biden's emails and other information that's coming out. These social media platforms are deliberately filtering that so that their people, because they know that they're a bastion for liberal people to sit and enjoy their protections. And conservatives are constantly being harassed and or quarantined and or what do they call that when you go to Facebook jail or they shut your account down for a few days to say, bad you. States have the power to actually make those types of laws to say anybody that is providing this type of content cannot. And as a matter of fact, the state should step in and say, we have jurisdiction over those things, and actually allow the, you know, I will just say, states can demand that there be zero filtering. And if Facebook or the platform itself feels that these are violations, they can turn it over to the state for state prosecution. You know as well as I do that the Constitution is clear. There is no dormant or sleeping or ineffective clauses within the Constitution. All lines, all clauses in the Constitution are active and should be enforced. When I say should be enforced, they must be enforced if the states are going to survive what's going on. But what we're trying to really point out is that the states do have the power to actually go after the press and actually go, when I say after the press organizations. That way they can also start creating standards. And if it's not considered a true press, it's a propaganda mill like your local newspaper. I've said this before. The states can actually start taxing them and regulating them, or at least labeling them to say, this is not a reputable, objective journalist corporation. Therefore, because they are gossip and or propaganda and anecdotal types of information, which means that it's not correct information, then they're no longer considered a public service and or a press service, an objective press company or media outlet or what have you. Anyway, many people think that only Congress can say change Section 230. Anybody that states this is completely misguided, because if it is not an enumerated power, not Congress, not the Supreme Court, nor the president have power to do anything regarding this. In 2018, what is it, 230? Yes, Section 230 was modified to make it possible to prosecute platforms that were used by alleged sex traffickers. So, in other words, the platforms then had, and these are, again, federal regulations, then had the heat on them that they had to go after these predators and these traffickers. As the power of the internet, and I should say the power of these tech companies has grown, many in Congress advocate changes to hold companies responsible for the spread of content celebrating acts of terror, for example, and many types of hate speech. I'm telling you, right there alone, that becomes another problem that the general government is violating, because the general government cannot violate any form of speech. Now, states have the power to identify what is considered pornographic, what is considered, offensive. Anyway, so Trump's got this draft, and he has this May executive order that was actually reported upon, and it still calls for, or actually instead of calling for the Federal Communications Commission to propose and clarify regulations under Section 230, the order suggests companies should lose their protection over actions they are deceptive, discriminatory, opaque, or inconsistent with the terms of service. Now, this is exactly what the states need to be doing. The states actually need to be creating these laws. Go through your state constitution. Find out, does your state constitution have any powers delegated or restricted from your state? So in other words, if they have the press shall be free, then they may look at that and go, oh, okay, that's kind of a really open-ended power that they've given to the press. I would say this, that they may say the press may be free, but then all they need to do is go in and define what the press is. The press is this. Individual reporters, any organization, then that is a media outlet or a press outlet, and basically start redefining what the press is and what shall be free and what they're not going to stand for anymore. My friends, as you understand, the Constitution is pretty clear that the general government has no role, responsibility, and power. And as much as I don't like, and I look at the social media platforms as enemies, here's the other thing, and I want to put this out there. I've told every single state legislature in South Dakota, Idaho, Wyoming, Montana, Washington State, Utah, Arizona, and Oklahoma, those few people that I know and we're connected with, we have asked them to please introduce legislation this coming session to go after social media revenue that is being made in their state. If you click on a YouTube video and you're getting hit with advertisements and so forth, YouTube gets paid. If you click on a link and it has an advertisement priority link, it may not be an ad, but it may just be pointing to Amazon because Amazon gets preference. Amazon pays Google. This is revenue that is being generated in your state. And you need to demand that your state legislators capture this revenue so that you can have some relief. Because I'm telling you, if anybody's got deep pockets, it's these globalist tech companies who are working in league with China in trying to create a big brother system and are truly trying to manipulate and control you. That's what I was trying to say. Okay. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. And in our next episode, pure marketing. I think you're going to love it. Adios. God bless.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.